Welcome back to the Deep Dive. After spending some time exploring the worlds of Italian, French, and Spanish wines, it got me thinking.
About.
It felt like the right time to take a step back. A big step.
Okay.
And look at the history of wine itself.
The history of wine.
That's a lot. There's so much to uncover.
Yeah.
It's incredible how long humans have been cultivating grapes, making wine.
Really is.
It just boggles the mind. But I guess that leads to the question, where did it all begin?
Right.
Was there like some kind of wine Garden of Eden? You know what I mean?
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
It's tempting to think about, just like one magical place.
Right.
Where it all started. But it's probably much more complex than that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we can trace some of the earliest evidence to specific regions, but it's more likely that winemaking kind of developed independently in a bunch of different parts of the world.
So no single origin story.
Not really, no. If you think about it, it makes sense though, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Grapes grow in so many different environments.
That's true.
So people all over the world, they were probably experimenting with fermentation, discovering the joys of wine.
Totally.
All on their own.
I hadn't thought about it that way. But so those early wine grapes.
Oh, yeah.
Those must have been very different from what we're used to today. I always picture like these lush vineyards.
I know what you mean.
Stretching way back into the past.
Well, not quite.
What were they like then?
So imagine smaller grapes, not as juicy, but over time with cultivation and natural genetic variations, they led to those plumper, sweeter grapes.
The ones we love today.
Exactly. The ones we enjoy today. And get this, there's this specific gene called FLB.
Okay.
And researchers believe it played a role in increasing berry size during domestication.
Wait, so there's a gene for bigger grapes?
For bigger grapes.
That's fascinating. So what does that tell us about?
Well, I think it highlights that interplay between human intervention and natural processes.
Okay.
People were most likely selecting grapes.
Picking out the ones they wanted.
Yeah, for desirable traits, like bigger berries.
Makes sense.
Even without really knowing the genetic stuff happening behind the scenes.
So it was really a collaboration.
Yeah.
Between humans and nature.
Yeah.
Shaping the grapes and shaping the wines we enjoy today.
It's like a dance through time.
It is. It is. And speaking of tracing things through time, let's trace the spread of winemaking.
Okay.
Especially in Europe.
All right.
How did winemaking get across Europe? Was it a smooth journey?
Not quite.
Really?
If we look at figure 2.14 in our sources, it shows a map of European grape cultivars and their genetic relationships. And it's actually kind of a tangled web of influences. Mm-hmm. It really challenges the whole idea of just one clear origin.
So it wasn't just like one group spreading out.
No, it was much more dynamic than that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Think about trade routes, migrations, even conquests.
Oh, wow.
People moved and they brought their winemaking traditions and their grape varieties with them.
Fascinating.
Right. It created this really interesting mix of influences.
Across the whole continent.
Yeah.
It's like a giant puzzle.
It is.
Piecing it all together.
Yeah.
Through the DNA.
That's right.
I bet there were some surprises along the way.
Oh, tons. Yeah. With tools like DNA fingerprinting.
Right.
We've actually been able to debunk some long-held beliefs about grape parentage.
Like what?
Well, for example, the Müller-Thurgau grape.
Okay.
People thought it was a Riesling offspring.
Uh-huh.
But with DNA fingerprinting, we learned that it's actually a descendant of Madeleine Royale.
A grapevine family secret.
I know, right?
That's a perfect example of how science is changing our understanding of wine history.
Mm-hmm.
So Europe was like a melting pot. Of winemaking influences.
Big time.
So then how did it spread to other parts of the world?
Well, human activity continued to be that driving force.
Oh.
As explorers went beyond Europe, they took their knowledge and traditions with them and introduced winemaking to new continents.
But it wasn't always peaceful, though, was it?
No, you're right.
I'm thinking about, like, colonialism.
Yeah, colonialism definitely played a role in spreading winemaking practices, but it's really important to remember the complexities and often exploitative nature of this period of history.
It's a good reminder that even something we enjoy, like wine, has this really complex past.
It does.
It's all intertwined with human history.
Absolutely.
Okay, but let's switch gears a bit. What about North America?
Okay.
Did it have its own unique grape story before European influence?
It definitely did. North America actually has a really remarkable diversity of native Vitis species. And Vadès is the genus that includes all grape species.
Interesting.
Yeah, and figure 2.5 in our sources shows a map of the geographic distribution of all these different Vitis species across North America.
Hmm. I bet that's a totally different picture than what we see in Europe.
Oh, it is very different. So many different species spread out over these huge areas, and it really challenges the idea that Vitis vinifera,
which is...
That's the main European species.
Right, right.
That's the be-all and end-all of viticulture.
So North America's native grapes tell their own story.
They do.
Of adaptation and resilience in this unique history intertwined with the land and its people.
That's a great way to put it.
It reminds us that there's a whole world of grapes out there, each with its own story and flavor potential.
It really is incredible.
But let's zoom out for a second. How has wine shaped human history beyond just being a beverage?
Well, wine's influence is basically woven into the fabric of human civilization.
Wow.
It's been a central part of religion, social rituals, economies, even art and literature.
That's incredible. I'd love to hear some examples.
Okay, sure.
Of how different cultures brought wine into their lives.
So, for instance, in ancient Egypt, wine was a super important part of religious ceremonies.
Oh, wow.
And offerings to the gods.
Yeah.
They even had a goddess of wine. Yeah. Her name was Renenutet.
I like her already.
She symbolized how important wine was in their culture.
A goddess of wine. Okay, what about other ancient civilizations?
Well, the Romans, they held wine in very high regard. It was a symbol of status, wealth, and the centerpiece of their gatherings and feasts.
Right.
They celebrated Bacchus.
Oh, yeah.
God of wine.
God of wine and revelry.
Yes, exactly.
So it seems like wine was more than just a drink back then.
Oh, for sure.
It was a cultural touchstone.
Yes.
Like a symbol of celebration, a way of life.
A way of life, yes.
And that a simple beverage could have such significance.
Really is.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. And that importance continued beyond the ancient world. In the Middle Ages, monasteries were really vital in preserving winemaking knowledge.
Interesting.
And techniques.
And they saw wine as more than just a beverage, too.
Yes. They viewed it as a sacrament.
Okay.
And a vital source of sustenance.
It's incredible how wine's been so intertwined with history for centuries.
It's like a time capsule.
It really
is. You're holding the stories of civilizations, innovations.
It's like every time I open a bottle, I'm tasting history.
I like that.
This deep dive has really opened my eyes to the fascinating history behind every bottle.
There's just so much more to uncover.
I'm ready. I'll keep going.
Right.
So those early winemakers, I mean, how did they figure out the techniques that eventually lead to the wines we have today?
Yeah. It's fascinating, right?
It is. Like, what were some of the early innovations?
Well, one of the earliest and most basic techniques was propagation.
Propagation?
Yeah. I mean, imagine trying to grow your vineyard without, you know, the modern nurseries we have now.
I bet there was a lot of trial and error.
Oh, yeah. Ton.
A lot of happy accidents.
Totally. One of the earliest methods was layering.
Layering.
Yeah. So picture this. You take a cane, which is, you know, a flexible branch of the vine.
Right.
And you bend it down to the ground.
Oh, okay.
And bury a part of it in the soil.
So they're making the vine sprout roots in a new spot.
Yeah, so they could create new vines from the existing ones.
So it's basically cloning, but for grapevines.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it.
So were there other techniques?
Well, as viticulture got more advanced,
they
discovered cuttings.
Cuttings.
Yeah. So instead of bending the whole branch, you take sections of mature canes.
Okay.
The ones that have the qualities you want.
Right.
And plant them directly into the ground.
So instead of like bending the branch.
Right.
You take a smaller piece.
Yeah. And let it grow its own roots.
That's way more efficient.
Well, much more. Yeah.
But I imagine there were drawbacks. I mean, these new vines, they were probably.
Well, they were.
Susceptible to the same. Pests and diseases.
Yes, exactly. As their parents.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So that's where rootstocks come in.
Okay. Rootstocks. So what are those?
This was a big innovation. Like it really changed viticulture.
Mm.
It involves grafting.
Grafting. Grafting. Like physically combining different plants.
Yes. It's like botanical surgery.
Wow.
So you take a cutting from the grape variety you want because of its fruit,
Right.
and you fuse it
Okay.
with the root system of a different species
Okay.
that's known to be more resilient.
So it's like giving the grapevine
Yeah.
a superhero's immune system.
It really is.
That's fascinating.
So you get the good fruit from one
Right.
and the strength from the other.
But why not just grow those strong species?
Well, they might not have the best fruit.
For winemaking.
Exactly.
So it's like this
It
balance.
could it.
Okay, but even with rootstocks,
Yeah.
I imagine there were still pests and diseases to deal with.
Oh, absolutely. Winemakers have always had to fight against all
Yeah.
sorts of threats.
Like what?
Well, there are microscopic fungal foes, pesky insects.
Oh,
It's a
wow.
constant battle.
Can you give me some examples?
One of the worst was Phylloxera.
Phylloxera.
Yeah, a tiny insect,
Okay.
but it devastated European vineyards
Oh,
in
yeah.
the late 19th century, almost wiped out entire regions.
Wow, a tiny insect did all that?
Yeah.
How did they ever recover?
It was a huge turning point for viticulture.
Right.
Rootstocks.
Rootstocks again.
They were the answer. They grafted vines using resistant American rootstocks, and that's what saved European vineyards.
It's incredible how they overcame that.
Yeah, it really is. It shows how resilient winemakers are.
But I bet the fight isn't over.
No, you're right. It's an ongoing battle.
So what are some of the things they're still facing?
Well, there are fungal diseases like powdery mildew,
Okay.
Botrytis cinerea, sometimes called noble rot.
Noble
We
rot.
can talk about that another
I
time.
forget that one.
But there are also pests like leafhoppers
Okay.
and grape berry moths.
Wow, so how do they keep up?
It's all about balance. Prevention, intervention, and respecting the environment. Modern viticulture uses a whole range of strategies.
Like what?
Well, they promote biodiversity.
Okay.
They use targeted treatments when needed.
Right.
It's about creating a healthy ecosystem.
In the vineyard.
Yeah, so that natural defenses can keep the threats in check.
That makes sense.
So they encourage beneficial insects like ladybugs and lacewings.
Okay.
They do canopy management, so pruning techniques that allow for better airflow and sunlight.
To prevent fungal diseases.
Exactly.
It's amazing how everything's connected.
Okay.
It really is.
But sometimes nature needs help, right?
Sometimes it does.
Like with treatments.
Yeah, sometimes you need targeted treatments like fungicides or
That
insecticides.
protect the vines.
Yeah, but the key is to use them carefully
Right.
to protect the environment as much as possible.
So it's this dance
Yes.
between nature's rhythms and protecting those grapes.
Well said.
And that dance, it goes beyond just pests and diseases, right?
It does.
Winemakers have to deal with
Oh, yeah.
all the environmental factors.
Temperature, rainfall, soil composition, sunlight.
It's a lot.
It's a lot to juggle.
So it's not just about making wine, it's about understanding all these factors.
Absolutely. All those factors influence the grapes, which influences the wine.
So they really have to be like conductors,
Yeah.
orchestrating all these elements.
I like that analogy. They're striving for this perfect performance.
Trying to create wines that express the uniqueness of their terroir.
Exactly.
And that leads me to my next question.
Okay.
Regional variation. Okay.
I mean, we talked about winemaking spreading, but how did specific regions
Right.
become known for certain styles?
That's a great question. It's where history, geography, and tradition all come together
Mm-hmm.
over centuries.
Yeah.
Winemakers in different areas developed practices
Okay.
that work best for their environment
Right.
and their grape
It's
varieties.
like this marriage
It
between
is.
the land
Yeah.
and the people.
Exactly.
Take Burgundy, for example.
Okay.
The cool climate, limestone-rich soil,
Yeah.
perfect for Pinot Noir and Chardonnay.
Right.
And over generations, they've developed these techniques
Yes.
to produce really elegant
Beautiful wine.
and complex wines.
Yes. Burgundy is a great example of that.
So each region has its own fingerprint, and it's expressed through the wine.
Yeah, but how do we protect that?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Especially in a world where information is so widely shared,
Right.
how do you preserve those characteristics?
Appellation systems.
Appellation systems.
They protect regional identity.
How do they do that?
They designate specific geographical areas,
Okay.
and they have rules about the wine production in those areas.
So it's about protecting the
Yeah, the
heritage,
heritage and reputation.
right, of wines from a specific region.
Exactly, like a stamp of authenticity.
So it's a guarantee that you're really getting a taste
Yeah,
of that place.
that's the goal.
And this often goes hand in hand with the specific grape variety.
It often does, yes.
Like in Champagne,
Okay.
only Chardonnay, Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier.
Yes.
For authentic champagne.
So it's not just where it's grown.
Right.
It's the grapes themselves.
It's about the grapes and how they're used.
To create that unique regional style.
Yeah. It's fascinating. All these factors,
yeah.
Geography, tradition, grape varieties.
Lead to this incredible diversity of wines.
All around the world. And speaking of diversity, we can't forget about the impact of colonialism.
That's right. We touched on that earlier.
We did.
But it deserves a closer look.
I think so, too.
What were some of the lasting consequences of colonialism?
On winemaking.
Yeah.
So colonialism did bring winemaking to new places.
Okay.
But it often came at a cost.
What kind of cost?
To indigenous knowledge and practices.
Oh.
Often European varieties and techniques they were imposed.
Oh, so not always a fair exchange.
Not always.
So the history of colonialism is tied up with these power imbalances.
Absolutely.
And the suppression of indigenous cultures.
Unfortunately, yes.
And the world of wine is not immune to that.
No, it's not.
It's important to remember that even wine has this complex.
It does.
And sometimes difficult past.
It's important to acknowledge those complexities.
Absolutely.
To appreciate the diversity of winemaking traditions all over the world.
So as we wrap up this part of our deep dive, what key takeaways should our listeners be thinking about?
I'd say remember that wine's history shows us
human ingenuity and adaptability.
From those early techniques.
Like layering and cuttings.
To the complex interplay.
Of terroir and tradition.
Yeah.
Winemaking has grown and changed along with human civilization.
It's a story of resilience and innovation.
Yes.
And a deep connection to the land.
And the people who cultivate it.
Exactly.
So when you're enjoying your next glass of wine, think about the journey it took to get there.
From those simple beginnings.
To the complex wines we have today.
It's a story that's still unfolding.
It really is.
So we've gone all the way back to the beginning, explored how winemaking has developed.
Yeah.
But now I think it's time.
What do you think?
To jump into the modern world of wine.
The modern world. All right, let's do it.
What's happening in the vineyards today?
Oh, it's a really exciting time to love wine.
Really?
Oh, yeah. There's so much innovation.
Like what?
Sustainable practices, new technologies.
Wow.
And this thirst for new and diverse flavors.
So what's driving all that? What's shaping the modern wine world?
Well, one of the biggest trends is the focus on sustainability.
Sustainability, yeah. That's everywhere these days.
It really is. Winemakers are really thinking about their impact on the environment.
Right.
And they're changing their practices to be more responsible.
While still making great wine.
Exactly. And consumers are noticing.
Yeah. People are definitely more aware.
They want to know where their wine comes from.
Right. They want transparency.
They want to know it's made with respect for the land, for the people.
And for the planet?
For the planet, exactly.
So it's like a shift.
It is.
In how we think about wine.
It's not just a drink, it's a choice.
It's a way to support
a
sustainable future.
I like that. It's a mindful choice.
So how are winemakers doing this? What does it look like in practice?
Well, it's happening all over.
Okay.
In the vineyards, there's organic and biodynamic farming.
Right. Less pesticides and herbicides.
Exactly. Water conservation is huge, too. They're using drip irrigation, drought-resistant rootstocks.
So it's about working with nature.
Yes.
Not against it.
It's about healthy soil, a healthy ecosystem.
And this isn't just in the vineyards, is it?
No, it goes beyond that. Wineries are becoming more energy efficient.
Okay.
They're reducing waste.
Right.
They're even changing how they package the wine.
To reduce their carbon footprint.
Yeah, it's a holistic approach.
It really is. Every step matters.
Every step of the way.
Yeah.
From the grape to the glass.
I like that. But what about the wine itself?
Okay.
Any exciting innovations there?
Oh, tons. Technology's playing a huge role.
Really?
Yeah. There's precision viticulture.
Precision viticulture.
So using data analysis and sensors to monitor the vines.
So it's like a health tracker.
Yeah. For every vine.
But how does that make the wine better?
Well, think about it.
Okay.
You can track water stress.
Mm.
Growth patterns, even predict diseases.
Wow.
This gives winemakers so much information.
So they can make better decisions.
Yeah. Exactly. About irrigation, fertilization, pest management.
It's amazing.
It really is. It's like personalized care for each plant.
What about inside the winery itself?
Well, there are new ways to control fermentation.
Okay.
And filtration techniques.
Mm-hmm.
Things like temperature-controlled tanks,
yeah,
new filtration methods.
You get rid of unwanted stuff?
Yeah, but without taking away the good stuff.
It's the character of the wine.
Exactly. So it's about using technology to improve the art of winemaking.
So it's not replacing traditional methods.
Not at all.
It's enhancing them.
It's this beautiful blend of tradition and innovation.
It's like a chef.
I was just thinking that.
Using classic techniques, but also new ingredients.
And new tools.
To create something special.
Exactly.
And just like that chef, winemakers are always exploring new styles.
Yes.
Like natural wines.
Ah, natural wines.
What are those all about?
So natural wines are about minimal intervention.
Okay.
They're made with organic or biodynamic grapes, fermented with wild yeasts.
Okay.
And they often don't have any added sulfites.
So it's like letting the grapes express themselves.
Exactly. Letting them shine.
Without all the additives and techniques.
Exactly. Natural wines, they have this unique character.
Mm.
They're raw. They're vibrant. They can be a little unpredictable.
But that's part of the fun.
Right. It's all about authenticity.
It's like the slow food movement, but for wine.
I love that.
And along with these natural wines, there's all this interest in lesser known grape varieties.
Oh, totally.
People are going beyond Cabernet and Chardonnay.
Yeah, they want something new, something different.
Something they haven't tried before.
Exactly.
So what are some of those hidden gems?
Well, there are literally thousands of grape varieties out there.
I know. It's mind-boggling.
Each one has its own story.
Right.
Its own flavor.
So which ones are people getting excited about?
Well, we're seeing a comeback of ancient varieties.
Okay.
Like Assyrtiko from Greece, Nerello Mascalese from Sicily.
Huh.
Chersault from the Jura in France.
It's like this whole new world of flavors.
It really is.
This deep dive has been a journey.
It has been.
From those ancient beginnings.
To the future of winemaking.
We've seen how it's evolved alongside us.
Yeah.
It's really amazing how it reflects our history.
Our ingenuity, our adaptability.
And our love of wine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a testament to nature's power.
And the creativity of winemakers.
And this shared passion.
For this drink.
That's connected people for centuries.
So let's raise a glass.
This year.
To the history of wine.
To the past.
And to its future.
And to the future.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive.
It's been a pleasure.
Until next time.
Cheers.